Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Catch with John Fisher on Blog Talk Radio, connecting life to faith.
We're just trying to get it together, trying to help the fellow man, hoping we can make it.
Well, we do think we can, although there are times we wonder. And the reason we know we can is because of the Holy Spirit in us and what God wants to do in and through us. We're going to have a great time tonight. Our guest tonight, we have had a couple times on The Catch on Blog Talk Radio. He is actually one of our board members of Catch Ministry, and he is also founder and president of Stutzman Public Affairs, a Sacramento-based firm specializing in campaigns, communications, and crisis management. And also, he is a respected pundit of Republican affairs, and I often see him quoted in the Times, and as a matter of fact, as recent as last week, I believe. So he's just a wonderful, articulate gentleman who can talk a lot about politics and about Christianity and the most amazing way in which those have kind of come together in good and bad ways. So, that's what we're going to discuss tonight as we continue our talk about Christians in the marketplace, which is, of course, where Rob is in his whole office and work is in the marketplace. So that's going to be the focus. I don't want to get too tied into politics because I really want to talk about the marketplace and how we live and function as Christians there. So please, everyone, welcome our guest, Rob Stutzman, to Catch Radio.
Well, thank you, John. It's good to be with you again.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great to have. It's been a while, and it's time. This little bell goes off. When I think about Blog Talk Radio, well, it's time to have Rob. And I promise we wouldn't talk too much about politics, but boy, you know, can you ever remember a time when the country was more divided than it is right now?
Well, no. I mean, not that I can remember. Obviously, you know, if we understand American history, there certainly were times it was more divided because blood was
well,
shed.
We've had
difficult times before where ethnicity and religion drove a lot of our politics, and there was bigotry that was manifest at times. But yeah, not in my lifetime, nor dare I say probably yours, John, that we can remember.
Mm-hmm, right.
Anything feeling as divisive and, divisive is kind of the word that's often used. I also like to say uncivil as the nature of our politics today. And it's not exclusive to the United States. I mean, this is pretty much the case of how politics are being defined throughout the Western world right now.
Mm. Do you have any reason for that? Any ideas that why this has been such a breakdown of kindness and civility and respect for the other side?
Well, there's nationalism that runs deep, and that's things that come out of biases and prejudices. There's a tribalism. All these things come out of a place of insecurity, right, and fear.
Mm.
And again, I go back to what we're seeing even throughout the Western world. And there's, you know, the immigration issues of Europe are frankly different than ours, with the refugees that have come up through the Middle East, and how, you know, there really is a culture clash of religion with Islam growing in Europe, and all the, you know, all this stew that just drives fear and insecurity. And so out of that, you get people that are driven in their politics to be against something before they're for something, and they want security. And so security becomes the premium, and it's we see this in the Old Testament, right? The Jews wanted a king, and God's like, all right, I'll give you a king. See how that goes for you. And it was a history of mixed bags, right, once you have a king. And so there's a little bit, I think, in American politics right now, a lot of people that out of that place of insecurity and fear and anger about what they're opposed to are willing to essentially accept the strong man, the king, in such times because they think it provides them security.
Well, which might explain some of Trump's success right now, would you say? Just because he's that kind
of
individual?
Of
I mean,
so he's the strong man. I mean, often what I hear from my friends who
sure
are
is.
Cult-like in their defense of Trump is that, well, no one else would have beat Hillary because no one else was tough enough, that type of thing. And they love all the brash talk, calling leaders of other nations by name, picking all these fights over trade. And, you know, kind of regardless of whatever the policy of all that might be, but just truly the brashness of it, bashing the media, right? Because, you know, conservative people have long time tolerated, you know, what's probably very real, you know, bias, general bias in mainstream media. And now there's a guy that's fighting back against that. So whether that's starting to encroach upon the norms of American democracy and our constitutional process, people aren't really focused on because they finally got the strong man that they feel is striking blows on their behalf. The other part of it, though, the success is, you know, these are fairly successful economic times, and that's usually what defines politics. Some people think Nixon wouldn't have been run out of the White House in Watergate if the economy had been stronger. Clinton, many believe, survives impeachment because the economy was strong. So, you know, that still is another factor, is that there's certainly issues with wage growth, et cetera, but things are actually generally pretty good economically in America.
Wow. So, you know, there's a very interesting history we've had in the last, say, 30 to 40 years where Christians have gotten really heavily involved in politics to where, you know, the media will even want to be reporting what evangelical Christians think and as a block. And as a voting block, and so that has created a place where, you know, we really went through a period of time there where we thought we could wield some weight in the world on the political scene, and we mean something now. And I don't know, I think that may be waning a little bit now. I'm not sure. But if you could assess for us where we are kind of right now in terms of Christians in politics. I mean, we're still very much involved, and the political scene really does yield and want to follow what evangelical Christians think and believe, it seems like. And a lot of people feel like that Trump's in the White House as a result of Christians. But where I know that doesn't answer for every Christian, I'm sure. And so where do you think I know this is a difficult question, but kind of where we are right now as far as the political landscape and Christianity as a whole, what would you say?
Well, I would say Christianity as a whole, we're a little bit all over the map. You know, you, certainly conservative Christians, and you know, which we've taken to calling evangelicals as a political category to define them, are a huge part of the Trump base, and they're very focused on voting on issues. And so the Supreme Court, you know, was a big issue for them, and they see assaults, you know, on quote-unquote religious liberties, and of course abortion, for instance, has been an issue obviously since the 70s when Roe came down. So those are all organizing issues for conservative Christians. Obviously, we know the history really in the 80s of Falwell organizing this and raising money out of it, the Moral Majority, et cetera, and people like Jim Dobson, Focus on the Family, became very politically involved. So anyway, there's now decades of conditioning of this. Of really, I heard one Presbyterian lecturer recently reflect upon it. For conservative Christians, politics becomes an organizing principle of faith. But I think you have other mainstream traditions that are sitting out there in a bit more in the middle and are not comfortable with what they're seeing out of the more conservative traditions and the way they organize around politics. And then, frankly, we have a lot of organizing on the in the left wing of Christendom. The volume isn't as big as the right, but the organizing and the standing athwart of Trump is very well organized and vocal. So I think we have a whole wide spectrum out there within Christianity, just like we do across the board and with the larger electorate. But I do think there's a lot of issues being raised within churches themselves and ministers trying to figure out how to grapple with this paradox of someone who behaves in a manner that is antithetical to everything about the gospel. And doesn't really truly seem to express any type of personal faith, in spite of some of the people that say that that's the case. There's no evidence of it. Only God knows, but there's no evidence that's manifesting itself in Mr. Trump's life. You know, and then being grateful about the Supreme Court appointees, and how do you kind of deal with that? That type of paradox. And my hope and prayer is that it forces some really good, hard, deep consideration, discussion, and ultimately teaching within the church, especially more conservative denominations, that, you know, God's sovereign, and do we really need this man-made political system to ensure that God's, you know, kingdom on earth comes to be?
Do you think that, as a whole, Christians have put too much faith in politics in the last 30 years?
Yes, yes, incredibly. And I say that as someone who has been in politics my whole life and was probably initially somewhat drawn to it because of the values and beliefs of my faith. Chuck Colson, of course, the former White House counsel for Nixon, who famously went to jail and converted in jail to a Christian and became a wonderful minister to us for decades, right, with his lecturing and writing. He wrote a book once called Kingdoms in Conflict, and I think the title probably speaks for itself. Our political system in the United States, I think, is to be celebrated. It's the Constitution stands out as the best governing document ever created by man, but it is still a document of man in a fallen world until we get a better, future when Christ returns. So, it is still designed to serve human incite human power, right, and authority. And that's kind of a lot of what Colson goes into. And so for us, as Christians, to put too much faith in that and confidence in that is I think misplaced. And we see this in Scripture. The Israelites wanted Jesus to be a political savior, right? And it turned out that he wasn't. They got mad and threw him overboard. So, the history of man is to want these immediate fixes to their political situations and somehow to make their lives better. I don't know, as Christians, we just have always struggled to get past that.
Yeah. We've been talking a lot about marketplace Christianity, being Christians in the world, in the marketplace. How is that? How do we do that when the world seems to have so many conflicting ideas of who a Christian is these days? How can we help people, I think, get a better understanding of what it really means to be a follower of Christ? Is that something that we can do as Christians in the marketplace? And how do you think we do that?
Well, I guess I have to start taking sides here, I guess, in the political climate for me to give my answer. I think we need to speak out for what the gospel is. And you have someone in the White House whose behavior is consistently antithetical to that. And I think there is tremendous opportunity to be salt and light and to be able to reflect upon those in our own personal spheres about how wrong this is and to speak out against it. Now, I won't get into how that translates into how you may vote or not. I think that's very personal and can become more nuanced. But I'm talking about specific behaviors, acts, words, the venality, the pettiness, all these things that we really know are just come from an evil place, corruption. I think it's a tremendous opportunity to be speaking about those. And I think many Christians are. I think there's a way to do that in a way where it's not a political discussion. It's a discussion about my faith informs me to not be okay with that and not to accept that and that I am grieved by that. And I think it's just really as simple as that. Don't have to bash the president. Don't have to declare how you're going to vote. But you can certainly start speaking to critiquing specific acts and words. And letting people around you know that you hope and pray for something better than that.
Right. And then there's the biblical precedent for reaching out to strangers. That was always important to the nation of Israel, and God always made provision for the foreigners and the strangers. And then throughout even the New Testament, we continue to see the hospitality, and hospitality is usually extended to those who are outside our little group. And that certainly is running against a lot of the general way of the marketplace right now. And, you want to comment on that?
it's interesting you bring that up, because on many occasions in the past couple of years, I have heard very good teaching around and have just sat with the parable of the Good Samaritan, something that if you grow up in the church, you become familiar with as a child. But there's so much nuance to that, particularly to understand all the cultural context and the historical context and what it really meant at the time, at that day and at that moment with who Jesus was reciting that to. And I just, I guess I've said this to some of my Christian friends is go sit with that parable and read it and pray upon it and try to then reconcile that with not being grieved by the tenor of what you see right now in our country related to to politics, and you and that can be applied beyond the president. We shouldn't solely pick on him, right? There's this incivility
right.
that takes place across the spectrum, but it's just, that whole point of sacrifice, welcoming, being completely illogical, seeing people as God's children, regardless of borders and boundaries, and not that it's fine to have borders and it's fine to have laws that govern those borders, but how are we really seeing people and talking about them and treating them and thinking of them? Are we thinking of them as people? It's just, there's just so much right there in that one parable that I think can be so instructive to Christians on how they want to go engage in the marketplace right now.
This whole idea of civility, I think is hugely important, because, you know, we are called to be like Christ. And, I just keep going back to the Sermon on the Mount where, you know, blessed are the meek, the who will inherit the earth, the humble, the peacemakers. Jesus is, and Paul talks about the kindness of God that leads to repentance and grace and generosity. And all of that is so antithetical to the way you get ahead in the world now. What does that mean for us as Christians in the marketplace? If we're going to seek to truly be followers of Christ, can we be this way? Can we manifest civility in an environment that everybody else is doing it a different way?
Well, I think we can in our own lives, and then we need to insist that civic conversation and leaders return to that civility. I think that's our real opportunity, and that may mean doing so sternly. And there's a place for tough discourse and argument and comparing of ideas, but of course it can be done so civilly. John McCain, our line of the Senate, who we just lost this last week, was a great example of that. He fought vigorously with members of both parties. And yet the nation mourns a very special type of person in the public square that we know we've lost, right? But that's really what defined him, was to be passionate, to be in the public square, fighting for what he believed in, but never, ever were their relationships destroyed. And there was always a high regard for people as individuals, regardless of their caste or where they were in society. And in fact, it's really the great American ideal of how I think it reflects. The great American ideal reflects the gospel because it's so rooted in justice and individual freedom, and to want to export that freedom and justice throughout the world. McCain's closest aide, a gentleman named Mark Salter, wrote a wonderful piece in the Washington Post. I would encourage listeners to go look it up. Mark Salter wrote essentially his eulogy to his boss, the man that he loved so much, and ended it with talking about dissidents in a faraway land that had that McCain had acknowledged at some point, and that they had remarked to people that they had a friend in America. And John McCain, as they fought for their own freedom and liberty and justice in their far-off land that we never give a thought to. And, you know, there was something very Christ-like in that whole notion when Mark wrote that. And it's like that's how we should act locally, individually, in the square as Christians. But, again, I go back to demanding that also from our civic leaders and from those we elect, and frankly from those in our pulpits as well.
Wow, that's great. That's great. Mark Salter, Washington Post. Let's look that up. Do you remember the title, do you?
Don't remember the title, but it was if you Googled or searched Mark Salter in Washington Post, you'd find it. Yeah.
Is it just Salter, as far as you know?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you for that. You're in Sacramento area. Do you get to see much of those who are actually in office? Or do you see them function at all? And what I'm asking is that I can remember in the past seeing glimpses of certain politicians who are just known as being loved by both sides. You know, they just have a way about that. They can talk to both sides and they treat people well. You can debate, you can discuss, and you know, a lot of these are getting older. And like you say, John McCain is probably a good example. Are there any younger examples of people like that? And do you see any evidence of, in spite of all this other stuff that's going around, when you really get down to the real world, you know, are there congressmen and women who actually can get along?
Well, there are. I mean, I've been around elected officials now for over 30 years. So I've seen a lot of them up close.
Yeah.
You know, most of them, you know, some of them are disappointing. Most of them are neither inspiring nor disappointing. And then, there are some that stand out. And it doesn't, you know, it's both sides of the aisle. It's, you know, the type of public servant that you describe. And I would say, though, that I am I'm encouraged by, actually, that I see that in younger legislators that come up here. I don't, you know, this whole kind of the war horse notion of politics is really more manifest in, I think, in a bit of an older generation. I'm encouraged by what I would see generally, generationally, by younger legislators. And in Sacramento, I mean, we have a lot of legislators here in their 30s, right? It's kind of their first or second stop in their political careers. They try to move up a ladder and... no, there's plenty of people I still am encouraged by. It would be it's wrong to paint with a broad brush those that, you know, choose to serve. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy thing to do, and come up here and try to actually do some good.
Yeah. Well, there are some people who have a lot of hope for the millennials and for leaders coming out of that group. A better attitude.
Yeah, the thing about millennials, for the things, the thing we can pick on about millennials, which we can all pick on those things, right? And we all know what they are. They're all cliches, but there's, as a father of a millennial, there's some truth to it. What I like about millennials is they're not bound by convention. They're willing to think differently and out of the box. They're not willing to just take the ideological boxes, for instance, that are passed along to them. So you see, you know, I see, you know, people of faith that are millennials that are Republican that want to become very much more concerned about human rights issues like access to water. For people around the world, and that may be what they organize around instead of organizing around abortion the way their parents did. So they're thinking for themselves, and obviously we're in a broken state of politics where we need new thinking and different thinking, and maybe that involves new parties and realignments and all types of things, but it will largely be in the hands of the millennials as a voting bloc and ultimately as those that will come of age to govern that I think... If there is to be a breath of fresh air of change back to something healthier in our politics, I think it's driven by that generation.
Yeah. You know, we have a new board member who is in his 20s, and he amazes me constantly with how hopeful he is. He really believes. I think this guy's going to be in politics eventually, and he's just brilliant for one thing. But it amazes me that he really thinks, he really believes he can make a difference. And
that's important.
It's kind of
John McCain believed that as an old man too. So, and he did. You know, it's an important part of, for the American system to work well, is for there to be hope, mm-hmm. optimism. Obviously, Obama used the hope word as his own in his campaign. But you know, Reagan called it the shining city on the hill. I mean, all the ideals of the Constitution and what we're supposed to be in America, so which is so unique, is what we should take hope in and continue to strive for, and that is not inconsistent with our faith, right? Because our faith gives us hope, and faith should give us security and comfort as well. And then out of that, instead of a place of fear, out of that place of confidence that we have in our faith, we can be hopeful people that can make a difference in the world. And so I would say that young man is on track. Now, I would also say if we put him in politics, it might ruin it, but that's probably a bad joke, right?
Oh, dear. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens on that one. Our time's almost up, but I've got one more question, because in the midst of all this, we've been discussing a lot about worldview, I'm probably going to have you back, and we'll spend a whole half an hour on worldview, because that's a huge issue in all of our lives. But I would like you to just touch on your own, what informs your own worldview, and is it something that is in flux? Is it always changing as you get to know the world better, and you know, just talk about the importance of having a worldview, and whether it's a good one, or I've been struggling over, you know, the way we use that word. We talk sometimes about a right worldview or a wrong one, and I think it's almost more like whether it's true or false, or whether it works in the real world,
right?
You know, those kinds
right.
of things. That's
yeah, I think that's a great question.
As a Christian, how do you think that influences you?
Well, growing up in a conservative evangelical context, right, I had lots of books and systems and teachings that told me what my worldview should be to be correct, you know, correct systematic worldview. You know, a lot of that was all very helpful, certainly well intended. And I wouldn't say my worldview changes as much as we're all on a journey, and so other things continue to inform it. And so there's a couple things that I point to. One is travel, you know, which is a privilege we have of affluency as Americans. But travel changes all types of context, including the way people engage faith in different traditions around the world. I mean, I can remember being in an Eastern Orthodox church in Skopje, Macedonia, 3 years after civil war, and watching a woman, you know, falling at the altar and praying in all these traditions that are completely foreign to me. But obviously, this woman very much was communing with God. Mm. So, you know, things like that. And there's multiples of those that, things I could point to. So travel's been imperative to me. Not everyone has that opportunity. But what we do have the opportunity is to look through the window of our online screens and try to access that type of experience as much as possible, if you want to find it. The other thing I think is to learn how to do the primacy of the gospel, and how that really has to drive your worldview, and that has to transcend political systems, economic systems, and all these other constructs, conventions that we have in our lives that are imposed upon us pretty early. Again, not bad things, but back to that primacy of the gospel. So I could summarize about what we've already talked about, John. Just sit with the parable of the Good Samaritan, and well, that's my worldview. I am, as so many of those things Jesus puts in front of us, right? It's what we are striving towards, of course, what we are falling short of constantly. But my worldview is to strive for that. And then, well, then how does that inform, policy and political issues when I come across them in my life? And then I have to negotiate those as I go along. But the gospel and understanding who people are, and that there's not different types of people, there's only God's children, is really, I think, what informs a worldview.
Rob, it's always great. It's always refreshing, and great to have you on. And thanks for the discussion. And I'll give you a call when my little bell goes off the next time.
Let me know. I always enjoy these discussions, and I need to. And thank you, because the catch is refreshing and sustaining to so many of us on a regular, daily, weekly basis. So, you know, thank you for the ministerial role you play in so many of our lives.
Oh, thank you for that, too. Okay, well, bless you. We'll be praying for you. What's on the horizon? What are the next big projects that are going to take up your time?
Elections in November. I have some campaign projects, so I won't bore everyone with them. But that'll keep me busy through November, and then we'll kind of see where American politics are at after that.
Yeah. So this is in November. This will be for local governments, state governments.
Go ahead. Well, California has a governor's race, obviously, where we are, but about 37 states will be electing governors this November. So very, very busy at the state level, and then all the statewide offices that go with that. And, of course, every member of Congress is up every 2 years, and big question will be who's going to have the majority come November. So, yeah, there's a lot going on all across the country with this election.
Wow. Fantastic. Well, we'll be praying for you, and we will we'll look to have you again sometime soon. Okay?
I'll look forward to that, my friend. Okay.
Okay. God bless. Thank you so much,
Thanks,
Rob.
Thanks, John.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Well, there you go, folks. That was great. It's always great having Rob on. We don't want that one. We want this one. I think we need a new engineer for this radio show. Okay. Great having you on Block Talk Radio tonight. Great to have you listen. Whenever you listen, you're down the road listening. Join in. Find us at the Catch. JohnFisher.com and find us there. Sign up to get the catch every day, and because that's what we try to do. We try to shake up everyone's thinking and make us think about the world we live in on a daily basis and how our faith informs that. So God bless you, everyone. Come back next week. Got some great guests lining up, so we'll let you know about that in the future. Okay, fantastic.